What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Daniel Wise, the playwright and director of the new Broadway hit on the life of Rabbi Shlomo Carlebach, Soul Doctor. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. I've been busy the past week writing sermons for the coming Jewish High Holy Days, which require a congregational rabbi to preach a lot of sermons in a short period of time. And the expectation is that they will be among the best sermons of the year, since that's the time of year when, you know, everybody shows up. In the course of this annual exercise, some might call it rabbinic torture, really, I have been playing with a joke that I haven't quite figured out how to use on the High Holy Days. It goes like this. A group of elderly, retired Jews gather at a cafe in Tel Aviv every morning. They sit for hours, drinking coffee and analyzing the world. Given the state of the world, their talks are usually depressing. One day, one of the men startles everybody by saying, "You know what? I'm an optimist." This shocks the other guys, and one of them notices something fishy. "Wait a minute," he says. "If you're an optimist, why do you look so worried?" And the first man answers, "You think it's so easy to be an optimist?" Now, the truth is, I am an optimist about Judaism and Jewish life in the 21st century, and Jewish life here in America in general. But being Jewish, much of the time I find myself critiquing and criticizing the errors and missteps of our organized Jewish community, and the lack of effort and commitment on the part of so many Jews today. So, my Rosh Hashanah New Year's resolution for 5773 is to share that optimism. Worried optimism, surely. I mean, I am Jewish, but optimism nonetheless, more frequently and energetically in the coming year. We have just one full week left in this Jewish year, having celebrated Slichot last night with our late night beginning to the High Holy Day season. This is the time of year when we apologize to everyone we've offended in the past 12 months and seek to begin the new year in the spirit of repentance, holiness, and purity. So, in that spirit, if I have offended anyone over the past year of Too Jewish, I apologize from the bottom of my heart. If in the course of 52 shows of scintillating Jewish content, I have overstepped my rabbinic and hosting duties with an untimely comment or harsh evaluation, I'm sorry. And if I have failed to adequately present some aspect of the Jewish world in our weekly hour together, please tell me about it, and I will endeavor to fix it in the coming year. Remember, Rosh Hashanah 5773 begins next Sunday night, September 16th. Make your arrangements to attend High Holy Day services now. It's getting late. To play us in for our High Holy Day preview of music today, for the coming Days of Awe, here is cantor Ben-Sion Miller singing Chazan David Reutemann's Hayom Ta'amtzenu from the liturgy of the mornings of both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Today, give us strength, bless us, remember us for life. This composition is kind of Jewish prayer as light opera.
Hayoy,
was the great cantor Ben Sion Miller singing Hayom Tamtzenu for the Jewish High Holy Days, beginning next Sunday night with Rosh Hashanah. Our guest on Too Jewish this morning is a remarkable guy, the playwright and director of the first Jewish hit on Broadway in many years, Soul Doctor, The Journey of a Rockstar Rabbi, about the extraordinary life and music of Shlomo Carlebach. He also brought the first Broadway productions to Russia and China, and he is an Orthodox rabbi who wrote a 6-volume codification of the Talmud. Find out how all of this comes together in one man, Daniel Wise, and how the new show came to be when we come back on Too Jewish.
Hi, Joe Spina and Mama's Pizza. Hey, did you know that from the beginning of time, we Italians have had a romance with food? That's right, we love food. Food's an integral part of our family life, our social life, even our love life. You know, it's this tradition of love and food that prompted the Spina family to open up Mama's Pizza back in 1980. We wanted to keep our family memories alive while bringing an authentic Italian experience to our community. That's why we still simmer our sauces the old-fashioned way. It's why we use fresh ingredients that would make our ancestors proud, and it's why our restaurants have a family-friendly and wholesome atmosphere. So visit Mama's today. It's a great place to find love and romance. Even though it's just with a slice of pizza, a fresh hot plate of pasta, or a delicious handmade calzone. Mama's Pizza with 4 convenient locations. Find them online at mamasfamous.com. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza!
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Daniel Wise. He is the playwright of a brand new show about Shlomo Carlebach called Soul Doctor, which is taking New York by storm and is soon to be officially opening on Broadway. Am I correct?
Hopefully you are.
He's raising the money right now. Daniel Wise is one of the really major stars of Broadway. His previous work has included the major hit Rent. He has opened shows in Russia and China and all around the world. And he has deep Tucson ties, which I want to share with our audience. Even though I know people listen all over the world, we are, after all, located in Tucson. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Rabbi.
So apparently your grandfather developed one of the most affluent areas of Tucson. Where did the money go?
My grandfather had a little habit called tzedakah, which is a street name for charity.
Charity, indeed.
Yeah, he... the story goes that he was very wealthy during the Depression and right after the Depression in the coat and suit business. And when he lost all his money in the 50s, he went bankrupt. He went to France. He was sitting by the river, and he said, "You know, there's one thing I still have. The one thing someone could never take away from you is what you've already given away, because you can't take away something that's already been given away." So he said that if he makes his fortune again, he will live very simply and give all of his money away to charity, which he did. And he developed with his brother's name was Mandelbaum, Henry Mandelbaum, and he and my grandmother Gertrude developed sizable developments in the foothills in a place called Silverbill.
Indeed.
And he lived in one of the little attached homes that he built and gave everything else away to charity.
Well, look, there's worse sins than giving everything away to tzedakah. Your background is really unique. I don't know how many major Broadway figures grew up in New York as yeshiva students, studied violin at the Manhattan School of Music, a little time at Juilliard, Shakespeare with Delos Brown, and also Talmud at the Rabbinical College of Canada. Is there like a large fraternity of you guys?
Yeah. Not all of us are Jewish, though. I'm one of the few Jews, actually. Actually, there is a well-known Broadway figure named Jackie Mason, who was a rabbi as well and went to yeshiva and has smicha, or rabbinical ordination.
He does.
So, yes.
I did weddings with his brother in New York, actually, at one point.
Who else has smicha? Yeah, that's correct.
Yes.
So, tell us just briefly, and then we'll continue this later. How did you decide to do a musical about Shlomo Carlebach?
Actually, I was asked to get involved with that from a fellow who I had met briefly, actually an eye surgeon, someone named Dr. Jeremy Chess. And I was in rehearsals with Rent, of all shows, and on our way to China with Rent. And I saw this fellow who I had just passed him in the street in Manhattan on Broadway and 70th Street. And I had seen him at the Carlebach Synagogue the Friday night before.
So the Carlebach show.
The Carlebach show, yeah, right. On Upper West Side.
Of course.
And he said, can I talk to you for a couple of minutes? And I really was busy. I was going to tell him when I get back in about 12 weeks, I'd love to sit down and talk with you. And then suddenly it dawned on me, it's like I met him in the Shlomo Shul, and Shlomo would have found 3 minutes and come late for everyone else. And here's, you know, we're in Manhattan, and everyone is so busy, too busy for each other. So I said, all right, 3 minutes. We'll have tea for 3 minutes. We sit down at a Starbucks. He says, I'd love to do a movie or a play about Shlomo Carlebach. I said, that's a great idea. There are millions of great ideas, but it's not yet a project. Very few great projects, many, many good ideas. So he said, what does it take to become a project? I said, something has to be written. He said, a script? I said, no, a check. So, right then and there, he wrote out a check for $50,000 to a company that didn't yet exist.
Was it still Shabbos?
Oh, no. It was a couple days later.
We will talk much more with Daniel Wise, the playwright and producer of Soul Doctor, the new musical about Shlomo Carlebach, as well as Rent and many other shows, when we come back on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts. That's twojewishradio.com. Here is our weekly 2012 presidential election campaign Jewish moment. There's nothing like a rabbi doing an invocation or benediction at a national political convention to prop up your support in the Jewish community in a close presidential race, I always say.
This practice has been going on for many years. I can remember the summer of 1984 when I began working full-time as a cantor at Temple Beth Am in Los Angeles, and the senior rabbi, Jacob Pressman, flew off to San Francisco to give the benediction at the convention that nominated Michael Dukakis. Remember him? Most people don't. Anyway, having a rabbi pray publicly at your convention, albeit briefly and early or late in the program, is certainly a useful way to curry favor with Jewish voters who can help swing a key state like Florida, for example. This week, Rabbi David Wolpe of Sinai Temple in L.A., author of 7 popular books and a prominent conservative rabbi, did the benediction after former President Bill Clinton's address to the Democratic Convention in Charlotte. Last week, Orthodox Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik began the Republican convention in Tampa. While no one seems to have records on this, quite likely the first rabbi to address a national political convention in America was Rabbi Stephen S. Wise, my grandmother's confirmation class teacher in Portland, Oregon, in the early days of the 20th century, by the way. Wise addressed the Democratic Convention in New York in 1924 and was apparently a big hit, partially because he was much briefer than most of the other speakers. Imagine that in a rabbi. As the New York Times said in 1924, the invocation set the keynote of this session, even though it was far briefer than the prayers of keynote speeches usually are. Dr. Stephen S. Wise, rabbi of the Free Synagogue, opened the meeting with an appeal for divine guidance that the delegates might be dauntlessly resolute for the right, that they might battle for the truth and not for advantage. The galleries applauded the prayer, something that had not happened before in this convention. Well, may all of this contemporary Jewish pandering, reaching out to rabbis, help make the presidential campaigns more honest and more moral. It's unlikely, but we can be optimistic. That was our campaign 2012 Jewish election moment. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gilbert, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
We started talking about the Histadrut, the giant overarching union in Israel that, as you said, at one point had close to 90% of the workforce as members. And you really couldn't get a job in Israel without being a member of the Histadrut. They created a lot of positive good for Israeli workers. They also made it easy to strike. And in the urge to make Israel a more competitive economy, a lot of stuff was privatized. And the power of the Histadrut has diminished. Where does it sit now?
In many senses, what you've just described, what in a nutshell was the process where one might say the Histadrut kind of shot itself in the leg. The Histadrut, at some point along the 80s, started utilizing its force in a way that was perceived by the public as being
counterproductive,
too wild, unthoughtful. They went on some very wild strikes with the ports and with some major companies, electric companies,
hospitals at times,
hospitals, universities. And I'm talking about strikes that took place for about sometimes 90 days even.
Right.
And when you're talking about a small country like Israel, there are only 3 ports to Israel.
Right.
Haifa, Ashdod, and Eilat. If you close them, you know, there are no supplies. You know, the country would shut down within 90 days. So that was very challenging. That led to a situation where a lot of people kind of became angry at the Histadrut, at the union, feel that they are the bad guys. Also, people start feeling that there are a lot of corruptions. There was a lot of money in the system. A lot of people that gained a lot of unhonest things out of their power within the union. I'm sure you had some stuff like that here in the States.
Yeah. Teamsters were legendary, but, you know, there's always that temptation where there's money and power.
Exactly. Also, the government felt that in order to allow the economy to start thriving, they needed to get rid of the union. The way to do that was to privatize, to take things that were owned by the government and transfer them into private hands, and to get, you know, external workers or employees that are not part of the governmental system, are not members of the union, that are owned by a private company. That weakened the Histadrut very, very much. It didn't have control over the employees, not the majority of them anymore. that also weakened the Israeli society in many levels, because at that point, because Israel is that small, there were some very specific families with a lot of money that understood the potential. They came to the government with the money and said, you know what, we'll help you out. We'll buy those stuff from the government. We'll take the control. But they bought it from the government in a, you know, garage sale prices.
Right.
So they got properties that were owned by the public.
Discounted. Pennies on the dollar.
Extremely discounted.
Pennies on the shekel.
Exactly.
Right.
And today, that's the new challenge, if you would like to say, of the Israeli economy, that it is very strongly controlled by very few families. And as a result, those monopolized companies can define whatever prices they want in the market. Prices go
up. That's where you get cottage cheese protests, because they can raise prices or lower prices, theoretically at will.
Exactly. And on the other hand, the union, the Histadrut, is no longer a significant player in the game. Well, it is a significant player, but it's not, it doesn't have the true power
that it used to have.
Exactly.
Thanks, Guy. We will talk next week when it's almost time for Rosh Hashanah.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
Everything you always wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 13th anniversary year with a brand new family class and in a new location. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn now. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not, and we feed you too. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up. Taste of Judaism is a tremendously successful education and outreach program and an exciting learning opportunity for anyone who is simply curious about Judaism or who wants to deepen their knowledge and gain an understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The classes include delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. The sessions are free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But you do need to pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501. This year, Taste of Judaism is offering both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class held at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class with rabbis, while kids have their own Taste of Judaism children's program with Jewish stories, crafts, and activities with excellent THA teachers. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There is no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Bila Anderson at 520-327-4501 for more information and register today.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Been a big controversy in the last few weeks, at least in the Jewish press and online, about circumcision in Germany, in which one state outlawed it, and the whole country was up in arms. The origin of this controversy is not what people might think. When you hear Germany and a ban on circumcision, you know, oh my goodness, it's Nazis. But that's not really what's going on, is it?
No, I mean, the Germans are extremely careful, much more so than anybody else in Europe, not to do or say anything that might smack of anti-Semitism. And they have extremely harsh legal penalties for any kind of incitations to racial hatred or anti-Semitism or whatever else.
Boy, imagine if they'd had those at the recent political conventions, it would have just blown them up.
Right. So, I mean, what's going on here is a combination of things. First of all, the Germans have been concerned for a long time about rising numbers of Muslims in their country, initially Turks and then a broader cross-section of the Islamic world, some of whom are very well integrated. I mean, they're members of the German parliament who are of Turkish origin. Some of them are third-generation Germans and speak perfect German, whatever. But if the anti-circumcision movement in Germany has anything to do with religion. It has to do with the far greater number of Muslims in Germany than with the tiny number of Jews. Jews are sort of collateral damage. But really, it's about sort of left-wing liberal sensitivities to the rights of the child and a belief among some Germans, indeed some Europeans, and also some Americans, that circumcision hurts the child, violates its rights. It should be left to the child to decide when he is 16 or 18 or 21 or whatever the legal majority is, whether or not he wants to be circumcised. And it's sort of an abuse of the child's body by the parents. So there was a regional high court in Germany that ruled in a case that was brought by some left-wing person that this was a crime and that anybody who performed a circumcision was guilty of a crime. And there is, of course, a chance that I mean, there was something about this also in California at some point.
Right.
And so, I mean,
Santa Monica, Berkeley both considered ordinances.
Right. I mean, left-wing nutcases are not limited to Germany.
That's and a technical term, of course.
Right. This is not an issue really involving anti-Semitism, but Jews are concerned, and they have the assurance of the German chancellor and a lot of senior German politicians that laws will be enacted on a federal level in Germany to protect the right of Jews, Muslims, and others to circumcise their children. I mean, there is a separation of powers. The legislature has powers. Of course, the Supreme Court in Germany could rule such a law unconstitutional.
Right.
That would take a long time.
Very interesting. And, you know, maybe we'll talk next week about the sort of concept of brit, which means covenant, not bris, circumcision, only brit milah. Let's talk about it some more next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A spaceship lands in the middle of Texas. As the Martians start filing out, a big Texan walks up to the one who looks like the leader. He asks the Martian, "Y'all got them green eyes?" The Martian answers in a machine-like drone, "Yes, we all have green eyes." The Texan again inquires, "And y'all got those antennae on your head?" "Yes, we all have antennae on our heads." The Texan is still curious. He looks at more of the Martians and again asks the leader, "Y'all got them long black coats?" And the Martian says, "No, only the Hasidim." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This coming week, we celebrate the final Shabbat of the year, which means that our Torah portion is one of the great sections, Nitzavim. You stand here today, all of you, the oldest to the youngest, wealthiest to the poorest, most famous to the humblest, the leaders of your community and the strangers visiting with you. You are all part of the covenant with the Lord your God, you and every generation to come who will be descended from you. This great brit, this covenant affirms that you will be God's people and God will be your Lord. That affirms that we are part of a profound and eternal tradition, a connection to our ancestors that will be carried forward to our descendants. Each of us, all of us, are part of this remarkable compact. It's an extraordinarily democratic and egalitarian agreement with God, a brit that's shared with everyone, regardless of gender or age. Children and women stand with men, not always the case at the time of the Torah, or even today. It's a very special covenant. But what is the content of the mitzvah that we are now to observe? At the climax of our portion, we are told, Ki ha-mitzvah hazot asher anochi mitzavcha hayom lo nifleti mimcha. Look, this mitzvah that I command you today is not too awesome for you. It's not beyond your reach. It's not in the heavens that you should say, who among us can go up to the heavens and take it for us and teach it to us so that we may do it? It's not across the sea that you should say, who among us can cross over the sea and bring it back so that we may do it? No, it's very close to you, already in your mouth and in your heart to do it. As Rabbi Lawrence Kushner says, the Torah is not somewhere else. It's already in us. We're made up of it. Torah is coded into our protoplasm, our DNA. That's why it feels good to live by the Torah, the way of all being. We're just doing what we've been designed for from the very beginning.
Perhaps the mitzvah that Nitzavim speaks about is no more than becoming aware of the presence of Torah in our midst, or more precisely, of the presence of God in the here and now. In this season, we prepare for our tshuva, our return in repentance, but if God is here right now, tshuva is a way of becoming aware that Torah is in our mouths and hearts. This may truly be the mother of all mitzvot, all commandments, for the other commandments are merely human refractions of this one mitzvah, the awareness of God's presence. And tshuva simply means God saying, return to me, become aware of me again, always in your life. A great thing to remember as we approach Rosh Hashanah, and always. When we come back on Two Jewish, our guest, the playwright and director of the new Broadway musical in the life of Shlomo Carlebach, Soul Doctor, Daniel Wise will explain just how that show came to be. Stay with us to find out on Two Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Everything you always wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 13th anniversary year with a brand new family class and in a new location. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn now. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not, and we feed you too. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up. Taste of Judaism is a tremendously successful education and outreach program and an exciting learning opportunity for anyone who is simply curious about Judaism or who wants to deepen their knowledge and gain an understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The classes include delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. The sessions are free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But you do need to pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501. This year, Taste of Judaism is offering both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class, held at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class with rabbis, while kids have their own Taste of Judaism children's program with Jewish stories, crafts, and activities, with excellent THA teachers. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There is no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila Anderson at 520-327-4501 for more information and register today.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Two more circumcision stories this week. First, in a follow-up to the German controversy over Brit Milah, the state of Berlin became the first of Germany's 16 states to declare the practice legal, following a Cologne court ruling back in June that non-medical circumcisions on children amount to a criminal offense. National legislation is pending to legalize circumcision officially throughout Germany. The Berlin statute authorized only doctors and not yet moyles to perform circumcision. The national legislation could authorize both. The state also requires that parents be informed of the procedure's medical risks before consenting, and that doctors do everything possible during the procedure to reduce pain and limit bleeding, which they do. June's court ruling led many doctors to stop performing circumcisions to avoid being prosecuted. Two rabbis have had complaints brought against them based on the ruling, but one was dropped last week.
Now it cuts like a knife!
In New York, ultra-Orthodox rabbis say that if a proposed law requiring parental consent for a circumcision ritual linked to two infant deaths is enacted, they will defy it. During the ritual, called Matzitza Bepeh and practiced today only by the ultra-Orthodox, a moyle removes the foreskin and then uses his mouth to stop the bleeding. At least 11 New York infants are thought to have contracted herpes from this practice, two of whom died, and two of whom have irreversible brain damage, according to the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. But ultra-Orthodox rabbis insist that the 3,800-year-old ritual is safe, and they refuse to tell parents there are any health risks. This is the government forcing a rabbi practicing a religious ritual to tell his congregants it could hurt their child, said Rabbi David Niederman, executive director of the United Jewish Organization of Williamsburg, an ultra-Orthodox organization. If, God forbid, there was a danger, we would be the first to stop the practice. Niederman said the research linking Matzitza Bepeh to infant deaths is full of holes, adding that the ritual is performed safely tens of thousands of times a year worldwide, and that babies who aren't circumcised can also acquire herpes shortly after birth. We're convinced the data is flawed, and there's no risk whatsoever, he said, adding that safeguarding the life of an infant is one of the Torah's most important principles, as indeed it is. Modern moyles remove this blood with a sterile pipette, but about two-thirds of boys born in New York City's Hasidic communities who are ultra-Orthodox are circumcised with the oral suction manner. Rabbi David Zweibel, executive vice president of the Orthodox Jewish organization Agudat Israel of America, confirmed this. The law would require moyles to explain the oral suction procedure and its risks, including the possible transmission of herpes simplex virus, and have parents sign a waiver. Niederman says the government should do what they feel is right and advise against the ritual if they think there's a risk, but don't put it on the moyle, he said. Don't force parents to sign something that's against their religious beliefs. Hal David, the Oscar and Grammy-winning lyricist who in the 1960s and 70s gave pop music vernacular the questions, what's it all about? What's new, pussycat? Do you know the way to San Jose? And what do you get when you fall in love? Hal David died last week in L.A. He was 91. David, whose lyrics explored love and breakups in a uniquely catchy way, was best known for the long strand of hits he and composer Burt Bacharach wrote for Dionne Warwick before their epic breakup in 1972. Know the way to San Jose. I've been away so long. I may go wrong and lose my way. Do you know the way to San Jose? I'm going back to David's work also found fertile ground on Broadway in the hit Neil Simon musical Promises, Promises, which was nominated for a Tony, and for which he and Bacharach won a Grammy. In the movies, in the Oscar-winning song Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and at weddings via the classic first dance song Close to You. Four other Bacharach David songs were nominated for Academy Awards. What's New, Pussycat, still Tom Jones' standard. Alfie, The Look of Love, and Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, the last of which brought them that Oscar in 1970.
Raindrops keep falling on my head, and just like the guy's feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling.
Hal David, born to Austrian Jewish immigrants who owned a deli in Brooklyn, was a late bloomer. He didn't land his first top 10 hit, Magic Moments by Perry Como, until 1958, when Hal David was in his late 30s. He achieved his greatest success well after he turned 40, a time when many of the other successful songwriters were half his age and many young performers wrote their own stuff. He began writing lyrics for bandleaders Sammy Kaye and Guy Lombardo in the 1940s, later graduating to pop songs and movie tunes in the 50s before getting his first hits. David and Bacharach were introduced to each other at the famous Brill Building in New York, where more great American songs and songwriters worked than any place else in human history. The Brill Building was the most important generator of popular songs in the Western world for decades, including Bacharach and David, Neil Diamond, Neil Sedaka, Paul Simon, Phil Spector, Carole King, Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil, Bobby Darin, and many, many others, most of them Jewish. The collaboration, based on Hal David and Burt Bacharach's talent and shared deep work ethic, was a tremendous success, producing a string of hits that have become American standards.
David and Bacharach's songs were more cosmopolitan and less hip than the Beatles or Bob Dylan, but they nonetheless spoke to a generation that wore turtlenecks and drank martinis, like jet-setter Burt Bacharach married to Angie Dickinson, unlike the more conventional Hal David. Their music continues to be sung and played everywhere, from Broadway revivals to Las Vegas lounges to elevators to dentist office to drugstores across America.
The moment I wake up, before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. Walk on in my hair now, and wondering what dress to wear now. I say a little prayer for you. Forever, forever, you'll stay in my heart, and I will love you forever and ever. We never will part. Oh, I'll love you together, together. That's how it must be to live with.
I Say a Little Prayer, number 4 hit in 67, was the most successful of the 35 or so singles that David and Bacharach wrote and produced for Dionne Warwick. They met her in 1961 when they were journeymen on the New York music publishing scene, and she was a 20-year-old backup singer. She sang on some demo recordings of their songs, and a disgruntled Warwick complained at one time, "Don't make me over, man." David turned that line into a full lyric with a feminist stance, unusual for the time, and Warwick's recording of the resulting song, Don't Make Me Over, was her first hit in 1963. From then until mid-71, rarely a month went by when the trio wasn't represented on the Billboard singles charts, with charismatic hits like Walk On By, Message to Michael, Alfie, and I'll Never Fall in Love Again. That great partnership broke up in a huge fight after the failure of the musical film Lost Horizons in 1972. It led to mutual lawsuits between Bacharach and David and Dionne Warwick. The songwriters did not collaborate again for 20 years, and never again with Dionne Warwick. David wrote that he strove for believability, simplicity, and emotional impact in his lyrics, which, combined with the frequent slaloms of Bacharach's melodies and rhythms, drew the most skilled technicians and singers of the time, Dusty Springfield, Gene Pitney, Karen Carpenter.
Why do birds suddenly appear every time you are near? Just like me, they long to be close to you.
While Hal David did collaborate with other composers, most notably Albert Hammond on Julio Iglesias and Willie Nelson's 1984 hit To All the Girls I've Loved Before, probably didn't know that was Hal David, he spent much of his later years involved in charitable and foundation work. He was president of ASCAP, the Songwriters and Publishers Organization, from 1980 to 86, and was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 72 and the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame in 84. Hal David and Burt Bacharach were awarded the 2011 Gershwin Prize for Popular Song, bestowed by the Library of Congress, the first time a songwriting team was ever given that honor.
You've got the look of love. It's on your face, the look that time can't erase.
Schmaltzy or not, he wrote the lyrics for a generation. Hal David, dead at 91. May he rest in peace. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish, Daniel Wise, the playwright of the new musical Soul Doctor, which is moving to Broadway soon, God willing, as we say in my business. The musical about the music and life of the remarkable rabbi and charismatic figure Shlomo Carlebach. He's produced and written and I guess I would say collaborated on a number of Broadway and other New York theater hits, particularly Rent. He's worked with Joseph Stein, Sheldon Harnick, Marvin Hamlisch, who just passed away, may rest in peace, Stephen Schwartz. Do you only work with Jewish people?
that's adorable, Rabbi. Actually, I've been very fortunate to work with some really, really great artists who are not just Jewish. And on our particular show, Soul Doctor, ironically, only a small portion of our creative team and our cast are Jewish, ironically, which is unusual for New York theater, and it just happened to work out that way. We have nothing against hiring Jews, but...
I'm glad to hear that we won't have to file with the ADL. You know, we joke about how many Jews are so prevalent in theater and comedy, but, you know... adapting the life of Shlomo Carlebach to a theatrical production presented, I would think, unique challenges. He was a peripatetic guy, extremely influential, but kind of countercultural as well. How did you how did this evolve, creatively speaking?
Originally, when, as I mentioned earlier, Dr. Chess had asked that we pursue the project and said he would sponsor it, I was not sure whether the show would make for a dramatic musical, a dramatic book musical, or we're better off as more of a jukebox musical review, like a Smokey Joe's Cafe or a tribute to someone's music that had various stories and skits that were somehow loosely sewn together by some kind of plot or no plot at all.
Right,
such as Cats or some other very successful shows. And we did a short workshop for 3 days, 3 days of performances at the Volksbühne, which is the American Yiddish Theater. It was their first English production. And we discovered that his life actually was the ultimate and theatrical character, his story, and he as a person. Really made for the ultimate theatrical character. He was someone with a very strong will, who had a very particular desire that was constantly confronted with obstacles, mostly inner obstacles, and was constantly torn. Theater is very much based on conflict, and he was a conflicted person until his very last day, and he really pursued his dream through music. And his dream was not to be a musician. It's something that he realized much later in life. Not until his late 20s, early 30s did he begin even composing music.
You know, I had the privilege of meeting Shlomo Carlebach a couple of times. I've worked very closely with his daughter, Neshama, on a project or two. Shlomo was a remarkably charismatic guy, you know, all the way to the end of his life. His reputation preceded him, too, for some of the excesses of his life. He was known to attract women wherever he went. He experimented. He was part of the 60s generation. I mean, he's a little older, but certainly was known to have an interest, for a while anyway, in anything that would intensify the experience of connecting with God, connecting with people. These are sensitive subjects for audiences even today. How does one handle issues like that?
Well, this isn't really a glorification of a life or a deification of a character. This is, as I said, this is very much a human story. And I think that the more colorful and the more intense this odyssey in terms of issues that are that come with them, not controversy but conflict, that have, you know, that are sharp on both edges, you know, that I think
sure.
that makes for the mind and the heart to pay attention, and I think that's what theater is all about. Theater is all about action, tension, and characters that live, characters that change. So this is, I think it's everything that you described provided a wealth of material for us. And we don't sugarcoat anything. We don't even honeycoat anything. But Shlomo always honeycoated everything. So
right. The
honey, I guess, is the music.
Yeah, I was thinking.
I once heard him do one song for 45 minutes until everybody was singing it in a performance. I'm told that wasn't unusual. Can't really do that on Broadway, can you?
It's interesting you mentioned that. I was speaking with Neshama recently, who came to the show twice this time, and she's very involved. She was very involved with the development of the show from the very beginnings. And that's Shlomo's daughter.
She's been on Two Jewish a couple of times as well. A lovely person.
Time to bring her back.
Absolutely.
So she was actually narrating the show to begin with. And I said to her, you know, I'm jealous of you because, or envious of you because she, I said to her, she, you know, to give a concert, especially with a gospel choir, and just to be able to sing the same song over and over and over again, it's such a loose medium, a concert medium, you know, the convention of just standing there and singing music together with everyone, whereas the theatrical convention is really a story that has to constantly move forward and develop, and if there's even an extra bar of music that is not really serving the story, it comes across dead and it holds the story back. So yes, we try as much as possible to create that kind of experience where there is the mantra-like repetition of the music, but in reality, maybe the music is repeated 2 or 3 times each verse, you know, for which would feel like much longer.
Sure.
You know, and it's a lot of work to do that. You bring up something that is one of our great challenges.
You know, I'm just particularly impressed not only by your smicha, but you wrote a text on Talmud, didn't you? Does that sell as well as the tickets for your shows?
Well, one day perhaps. They did actually sell. It's sold and it's studied all over the world.
So I understand.
That was like a lifetime ago, it feels like. Thank God it's a separate, not that much of a crossover audience. Otherwise, I'd be forced to do two, you know, offer 2-for-1, you know, like
sure.
The Broadway show plus the books.
Plus the multi-volume Talmud Concordance. Right, yeah. And the T-shirt, too.
A book and a T-shirt and a coffee mug.
I want to thank Daniel Wise for a great visit here on Two Jewish. The show is called Soul Doctor, about the life of Shlomo Carlebach, soon to be on Broadway. And I think, from everything I've heard, going to be a major hit. Where can people find out more about the show?
There's a website, www.souldoctorbroadway.com. Soul Doctor Broadway, all spelled out. S-O-U-L, Doctor, so Broadway.
Thank you.
.com, and plenty of information there. And please write to us. Send us your comments, your ideas, your feedback, and even complaints.
Well, you know, if they're Jewish, kind of goes without saying. Daniel,
I ain't kidding.
No, never. Daniel, I want to thank you for a great visit on Two Jewish, and wish you an early Lashana Tova, a good year and a sweet year, a successful one.
Thank you, Rabbi Cohen, and the Shana Tova to all your listeners and to you and your family.
Thank you. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guests will be Noah Levitt and Helen Kim, authors of an important new article on Jewish-Asian intermarriage. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or our TwoJewishRadio.com website, and like us on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes from Jewish composer Bonya Shur, who passed away last week and with whom I worked for 2 years in Cincinnati back in the mid-1990s. It is Bonya Shur's Kedusha for the Sabbath, his prayer of sanctification used by, oh boy, nearly all Reform congregations. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good last week of the Jewish year, and a week, we pray, of peace.